The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello and welcome back to the Inside Ellen Road podcast. I'm Joe Donoghue and I'll be joined as always by Graeme Smith, YAP's chief football writer. The Javi Gracia era is underway with one win and one defeat so far. Southampton was seen off at Ellen Road last weekend in what felt like the release valve being let go all of a sudden. And even though Leeds bowed out of the FA Cup on Tuesday to Fulham, there were plenty redeemable aspects to a performance which on another day could so easily have yielded a place in the quarterfinals. Graeme, we're just over a week into Gracia's tenure. First impressions on the football that you've seen so far?
Sensible soccer is what I would call it. They've been compact, as he's talked about. They've been difficult to play through centrally. It is difficult to judge because Southampton came to Elland Road with a plan that I like to call just pure progressive jazz metal, where they would just give the ball to Lavia in the middle of the pitch. And then he would just, you know, look up and see nothing and then just do whatever with it. You know, he could do very little. They didn't really seem to have a coherent structure on the ball, Southampton. And that made it a bit easier, I think, for Leeds to vend, to press, to stay in their shape and be organised. And Southampton didn't really create, did they? You know, there was that one shot, I remember, Armstrong, was it, got in behind on the left. And but he didn't really do anything with the shot. Other than that, I don't remember them doing a great deal.
Yeah, it didn't feel as though the game was out of Leeds' grasp at any point.
No, it felt like control, actually. It felt suspiciously like something we used to know, which was, I believe, called control, but we haven't seen it for a long time. So, yeah, it all felt very sensible in the face, obviously, of a very weird Southampton approach to a game that they needed to win, really. You're bottom of the table against a fellow relegation battler, and you're time-wasting in the 37th minute? I find it very hard to fathom. But I thought that Leeds played well, certainly deserved to win, didn't create a huge amount, but you could see that they were being more patient in possession and that they were taking their time on the ball and that they were probing for an opening on the left. And if it didn't come, they'd switch the ball back to the right again. It wasn't helter-skelter. It wasn't, you know, rock'em sock'em robots football that we've seen previously. And then at Fulham in the FA Cup, I thought they created a lot of chances. They looked better going forward than they did against Southampton. And they largely restricted Fulham to shots from distance, which ordinarily might be okay. You might get away with that unless two Fulham players decide to just curl the ball beautifully into the top or far right corner of the net beyond Melier and win the game. I think Gracia's impact can be seen just in the fact that everything's a bit calmer. They certainly look harder to break down. Apologies for my dog growling. He can see another human being within 200 yards. It's his cue to go mental. It just looks sensible. It looks reliable, like a trustworthy system. And you could talk about the finer tactical details, but he wanted balance. And I think that's what you can see them moving towards. I don't think it's quite right yet because I think the chance creation needs to be better. And I think they obviously need a bit more composure in the final third. But you can see what he's going for and you can see how it might just work.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get on to that and we'll get on to sort of what Javi Gracia wants from his Leeds team and what he's gleaned from them so far in terms of the tactical side of things. But we had the delight of the Putney Bridge Premier Inn on Tuesday, didn't we? No sign of the squad going for a pre-match stroll down King's Road, though. Bit of a disappointment for you, considering that you spent most of the time looking out the window with your binoculars. I presume that's why you brought them. But there was plenty for the eyes and ears to take in on what was a relatively short walk to Craven Cottage, wasn't there?
Interesting place, isn't it? To go and watch football. I don't really know what you're getting at with the question, but I enjoyed that.
I've got five things here noted down that you.
Oh, are you talking about the Trail of Blood?
Yes, of course I'm talking about the Trail of Blood. How many other games do you stroll to through Central London?
This was not my first Trail of Blood. This wasn't my first Trail of Blood. not my first Trail of Blood this year. That was interesting. And also trying to work out, at which end of the incident we were approaching. Was it the whatever that happened that spilled the blood, or was it the person spilling the blood that we were?
Or the perpetrator,
we were heading towards. Certainly wouldn't have been a crime, not in that locale, not in that postcode. So it must have been a frightful, fearsome accident. I reckon what's happened is somebody has, after work, obviously gone to open their bottle of red as they're walking home from work, or perhaps on a fancy e-scooter, and they've cut themselves on the bottle or the bottle opener. I think that's probably what's caused it.
See, I think it's a little bit more extravagant than that. Do you know what, when you open sort of a bottle of champagne or something and you use the knife and you go to, I don't know. I don't know, chop the top? Yes, yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I think what they've done there is they've left their finger at the top of the bottle as they've swiped up to get the cork out, and they've just taken a big chunk off the end of their finger. And they've been going around, going, I'm going to be late to the match, won't be able to deliver my Victoria sponge to all the people that I sit next to at the cottage.
We should stop before it becomes an all out class war. But what I will say is that when I heard a supporter right behind me use the phrase, we went a bit overboard with the range cooker, then I struggled badly to contain myself.
That's why you're just vibrating next to me, just like laughing silently.
Other gems included, where are Leeds? Oh, they're up north. No, in the table. And is this a record for the most American players playing in a Premier League game? Because Leeds have three. It was an FA Cup game and Leeds had two on the pitch at the time. So it all felt a little bit like, I think you pointed it out, the Harry Enfield sketch with the Arsenal fan who brings the hamper to the game. They're just not kicking the goals. But they were kicking the goals, and that was sadly the point. Fantastic new stand they've got there at Craven Cottage. They've got for themselves. It's been in construction the last few times we've been. Wasn't open the central section of it, but they did have fans to the left and to the right. Quite an imposing stand, isn't it? Like quite sheer, quite steep.
And in terms could do with improving, though, in terms of the infrastructure, they could do with improving the size of the concourses at halftime. Took about 15 minutes to get back to the press room, didn't it?
Yeah, the concourse is like a concourse for ants. It needs to be at least three times that big. And it didn't feel altogether comfortable, did it? I mean,
Lots of posh elbows.
I felt at least two posh elbows, two posh angry elbows in my back. As we tried to make our way back to our seats at halftime, but atmosphere wise wasn't great. At least they didn't have the clappers this time, which goes in their favour. There were some Argentine students who were making quite a bit of noise. Who they were making the noise for is entirely up for interpretation. I'm not sure they were there to support Fulham or just to support football. Maybe football was the winner, but I thought the Leeds fans were incredible, and that's something that. And that was something like 6,000 was their Leeds fans at Craven Cottage. It's noticeable, isn't it, the difference it makes when you have a proper allocation for a game and not the kind of capped 3,000 that you're allowed to take for a Premier League game.
Okay, so earlier we said that we were going to talk about sort of maybe the nuance of the tactics that Javi Gracia has sort of implemented or tried to implement so far. And I mean, he hasn't had a great deal of time to work with the players on the pitch. He came in last Tuesday, but only got his work permit on the Friday. So had one training session before the team had to, disembarked the training ground and went to the team hotel before the game against Southampton. And then much of Sunday and Monday will have been taken up with either recovery sessions or traveling down to Fulham for the game. So he hasn't really had the opportunity to get, you know, his ideas into the players. But I think we both recognised on Tuesday night that there were some patterns which were being repeated that we'd seen against Southampton and were clearly intentional, and little movements from players sort of, you know, dropping in between Tyler Adams dropping in between the central defenders to ease in build up to effectively create what Javi Gracia refers to as a superiority out wide. Other people might know it as an overload, where you basically have, you know, three Leeds players against two Fulham players, which theoretically would make it easier to pass around them and find a way out of trouble. He mentioned that today in his press conference. Graham, you spoke to him about that. And I feel as though he's very succinct with his answers, but he actually did share quite a lot. It was quite enlightening.
Yeah, I mean, he just talked about how that gave them superiority at the back and out wide when the team plays with two strikers. You know, the opposition plays with two strikers. It means that they have another option in order to move the ball. And I think his entire thing is making the players more comfortable, more confident on the ball and in possession, so that they can actually pass it around. Passing the ball at times has been difficult for Leeds, and passing the ball accurately. And they've had some issues in midfield. I know that there was a graphic put out about Weston McKennie's pass completion after the Southampton game, but a lot of those were kind of 2-3 yard passes or flicks, you know, and the flicks were great because they're high risk and they might unlock a little bit of pressure or a tight area. But when it's come to like the through balls and the kind of lower percentage stuff, Leeds have struggled a bit, and they don't have a Pablo Hernandez in there that's going to put it on a plate, you know, and dissect the defence with a diagonal daisy cutter that just lands on a striker's foot. They don't really even have a Rafinha who's going to pick up the ball, you know, in a wide area just over halfway and curl an absolute beauty of a through ball over the top. They don't really have that player right now. And what Gracia is having to do is settle things down. And I think what he's trying to do is construct a way that Leeds can progress the ball and progress it accurately through to the final third to create a chance without the players being under undue stress or pressure. So I think what he's trying to do basically is ease their way into the final third. And some of the football they've played has actually been quite nice. You know, they've gone back to front a couple of times playing nice football. Some of it has been quite quick, and that's been good. And some of it has been a bit more patient. And if it works, brilliant. But also, I think not only it working, I think it will be attractive for fans, the fact that Leeds are passing the ball again and passing it on the deck. But I do think that, you know, we've talked about it before, haven't we, that you've got a squad, there's a lot of runners in the squad, there's a lot of athleticism, players who can press, players who might be good at playing quick football once the ball gets to them. But it's sometimes difficult to see where that pass that Pablo could play, or even sometimes where the pass that Click could play, where that's coming from. So, yeah, I just find it interesting that he's kind of used that on Tuesday night. You know, you had Rasmus Christensen pull in very wide to the right as a centre-back. Luke Ayling was then bombing forward, and then you had Somerville ahead of him. And then you had Tyler Adams perhaps dropping back in to pick the ball up. In the midfield options he's got with Adams, McKennie and Rocker, you'd have to say that Rocker is probably the one you want to see picking the ball up, because he's the one that could ping a pass from deep. He's not a Pablo Hernandez in that he's not going to tear a defence apart, you know, in a number 10, number 8, number 10 position. But from deep, he is a player who can deliver the ball to a Jack Harrison or Somerville or Onyonto out wide. So going forward, if he's going to continue to use that tactic, I think you'd probably want Rocker picking the ball up between the centre-backs.
Yeah, I mean, Javi Gracia was referencing sort of the requisite experience that sometimes players or teams need today in his press conference. And I'd agree with you in the sense that Rocker is probably that player that you'd want dropping between the central defenders if that's something which Gracia persists with. And I don't see why not. You've seen numerous teams, particularly those coached by Spanish managers, actually.
I know it's something that Rafa Benitez employs or did employ at previous clubs. It's something which, in theory, what the explanation that Gracia gave was, just going back to the overloads thing, is, you know, having possession of the ball, having Christensen pull out to the right, and then Ayling push forward. It's not because it's purely to, if you think of it in terms of the formation as lines. So ordinarily you'd have a four and then a four and then a two, for example. In possession, you've then got a midfielder dropping in to the central area in defence with the ball, playing it out wide to the right. You've got that fullback then pushing up. So it's effectively, again, you'll have four players in the first line, four players in the second line, and then the two strikers up top. But it'll be a little bit lopsided. So instead of having two central midfielders when you've got the ball on the right, you'll have one central midfielder and effectively two players in that right-hand space, which is essentially the superiority or the overload, which should, in theory, be easier to bypass the other team by utilising. So that's essentially what Javi Gracia was saying, a lot more concisely than I just did there. So kudos to Javi for that, because it, and also in a second language. I wonder how I'd fare if I was trying to explain the concept of overloads in Spanish. There'd be a lot more hand gestures. That's something which I don't think Gracia uses too much, hand gestures. I'd be gesturing all over the place.
That's because he's so calm. He is just...
He also has a lot of experience.
He's Captain Sensible, isn't he? Like, he's seen a lot. He's been a lot of places. He's managed a lot of teams and a lot of players.
He's been to the outback of the Ivory Coast. He's been to the jungles of North America. He had his breakfast in Moscow and his team Wood Street Nick.
He swam the straits of Zoha.
With those football boots around his neck, yeah.
Yeah, with these pumps tied around his neck. And now he's right back here on the family patch. he's just not fazed by any of it, is he? Like, his heart rate hasn't really got above his whatever his resting rate is since he arrived. And you notice that on the touchline as well. And there have been suggestions over the past year that not just for Jesse Marsh, but for Mikel Arteta as well, that seeing your manager lose it on the sideline with a referee decision or with a VAR call or whatever it is, and seeing them get sent off or seeing them get a talking to, or just seeing them generally out of control, there is a question about what that does to a player's mental state and a player's resting heart rate, you know, during a game. And I just feel like, we talked about it when Skubala took over, that he was kind of the calm presence that Leeds felt they needed. And Gracia is certainly an extension of that feeling. You know, he just very, very measured in his approach, in what he says.
Commands respect almost.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's a credibility to what he's saying, because you can see it as well. It's not just, it sounds good, but actually what he's talking about, you can kind of see it in action. You can see that Leeds are slightly calmer, that they're a bit more composed. Certainly T to green, when they get into the final third, is where they're snatching at things still. You know, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, Weston McKennie, Nyonto, you'd give a pass for that chance he had when Ruter put him through, because he was quite wide on the left and he got the shot on target. You know, it was a decent effort. But a lot of players are putting things over, putting things wide, not showing the necessary cool head and technical finishing ability that you need in these situations. Bamford has miskicked or air kicked a couple of times in good positions. Ruter, at least on Tuesday night, you know, he hit the post, desperately unlucky not to score with that header. He also hit the target and the net and was robbed of a goal, essentially, by a very theatrical, flailing-armed swan dive that the referee bought, unfortunately.
Every time I watch that clip, Harry Wilson's there. He jumps off his own volition. Like, he jumps off his feet after he feels the push in the back, or not the push, he feels the contact. It's a
delayed reaction that was executed in such a way to draw the full attention of an official. And the problem is with such incidents is that if there is contact, and there was, then there's an out for officials who buy it, because the referee can say, well, there was contact, and then VAR will look at it and think, well, there is contact. There's not a clear and obvious error there. it just needs a bit more. I don't know that. But then do we get into second guessing officials again? I mean, for me, you could just take VAR now and chuck it in the bin, and we'd all be, I think we'd all be happier.
Push from here on a large hill and then set it on fire.
Yeah, set it on fire.
Yeah,
get it in Thames.
I'm just going back to that Harry Wilson point. I was quickly Googling it there while you were speaking, so I didn't hear or think about anything you just said. I wasn't listening at all. But it reminded me, as if I'm surprised that nobody has edited together the Wilhelm scream. You know, the really famous movie scream of that Hollywood has used countless times in films over the years. Obviously, I'm not going to do it. This is a very serious podcast, as I'm sure everyone knows. No whimsy, no screams. But that famous scream, as soon as he goes up in the air, it's bothered me, Graham. It's bothered me this week.
Yeah, it has. And somebody countered on Twitter, it's only what Ailing does. Now, there is a kernel of a point there in that Ailing sometimes goes to ground with an Ailing flop when the contact is plainly not sufficient to send him to ground, but he's felt the contact and he goes down. Most of the time, enough of the time, Ailing puts his body in a position where there's going to be contact. He's protecting the ball, he shields it, a player comes into the back of him and he goes down and he gets a free kick. I would say a lot of the times that is actually a free kick, it's a foul. But what Weston McKennie did was barely brushed a player with his hand in the act of jumping into the air. It wasn't a two-handed shove in the back. It wasn't even really a one-handed shove in the back. It wasn't.
What
even
are you supposed
shove.
To do as Weston McKennie in that situation? You know, you're at an attacking corner. Are you supposed to not make contact with the defending team?
You're creating separation in order to be able to
gain
jump.
An advantage. It's very, very much within the rules of the game, and
it's annoyed Gracia as well, hasn't it? I mean, it's obvious
very
that
soft. Very, very soft.
It's you know, he brought it up almost unprompted because he was talking about. I think he might have been talking about Routier playing in a two with Bamford, and he talked about how unlucky Routier was, and he was. He certainly showed more, didn't he, at Fulham, Routier.
I mean, could have had two goals and an assist.
Yeah.
On a different night. You know,
but whether it's him...
waxing lyrical about how 30 million was a bargain, so...
Yeah, I don't know if we're there yet, but...
Well, no, obviously not.
I'd certainly say that he showed more, and whether it's him or whether it's Bamford or whoever it is at Stamford Bridge on Saturday, they just need to show composure. You know, this is the time for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking ahead to Stamford Bridge and Chelsea this weekend, you know, they're in dire straits of their own at the moment. They certainly don't have the momentum that Leeds have or will have carrying through from last weekend's win over Southampton. Chelsea were beaten 1-0 by Southampton the previous weekend. And they look like they're just not like the Chelsea that we've come to know over the past 10, 15 years, where even when they're going through a bad spell, they are able to pluck a win out of somewhere or a performance which says, you know, of course, we haven't gone away. But it doesn't seem like that at all. And the pressure is definitely building on Graham Potter. One goal in the last six games is the headline figure. Now, I do want to stress that having looked at sort of the expected goals over those past six games, they have been criminally unlucky in terms of how many goals they should have scored. So based on their XG, which is around the 9.00 figure, they should have been expected to score nine goals from the quality of the chances they created. Instead, they've scored one, which is a staggering underperformance. So that's a mixture of poor finishing and also expert goalkeeping. And you know what? Just a little dash of luck as well. So you'd anticipate that run will come to an end. It's just the onus is very much on Leeds to make sure that the frustration that Graham Potter's feeling at the moment is prolonged for another week. And just staying with the expected goals point, we all saw the performances against Southampton and Fulham from Leeds, restricting those two teams to limited chances, to opportunities from outside the area. Yes, I know that Fulham scored twice, but they were both worldies and very, very low probability shots of going in. Combined, I think the XG that Leeds conceded in those two games under Garcia is just over 0.5. So you've got to say that there is a good chance that Leeds will also put in a stern defensive performance at the weekend, or at least you'd hope so.
Yeah. we were talking about this, weren't we, and how the first goal could be absolutely pivotal because it could all, the house could come crashing down around Graham Potter in a big way if Leeds go ahead against Chelsea. They are simmering right now. And Leeds have been there. They know what it's like, you know, to kick off a game knowing that the first goal going against you would turn the atmosphere toxic around you, and you'll have the travelling Leeds fans doing their utmost to rile up their counterparts. They do still need to be defensively solid. Like, there's part of me that thinks if ever there was a time to go for the kill, you know, to go for it, it's against this Chelsea team right now, because if you do get the first goal, they might crumble. But also,
anyone who's down to, who's thought about downing tools within that squad, it just becomes all that easier when you go a goal down, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that said, it's still Chelsea. They've still spent a lot of money on some very, very good players. Graham Potter is still a very good manager, as Garcia pointed out. And it might not even take the first goal. It might just take Leeds being solid enough to frustrate them for 20 minutes, for 25 minutes, for 30 minutes. If you can do that, then the grumbles will turn into frustration. And you don't want to overplay it and say that turning the Chelsea fans is the ultimate goal of Leeds here, and if they do that, they'll win the game. But it might help. And when you're in Leeds' situation, you take any help you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of this weekend, do you have a score prediction for us, Graham, of what will play out at Stamford Bridge? And you can pad it out with a little bit of narrative. If you think it's going to be a high-scoring affair, whether it goes 1-0 to the home side or the away side, and then if there's a remarkable turnaround, a 2-1, what are we going with?
I'm going to say...
See how I bought you some extra time there for you to think about your prediction.
I'm going to say Leeds United are going to win 2-1.
I think so too.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, we're for once aligned. Everyone's aligned.
Everyone's aligned. There's alignment. I've never felt so much alignment since my first day here, Graham.
The clarity of our predictions is superb here.
Which is superb given the stress of the moment.
As for goals, I'm going to say young Patrick Bamford with another at Chelsea. And I'm also going to say Jack Harrison.
It does feel like a Jack Harrison goal type of game, doesn't it?
I just feel like he owes everyone a goal, and he is owed a goal. I thought he did really well at Fulham when he came on. I thought he had a real impact, and he wasn't indecisive in possession. He knew when he got on the ball what he was going to do, and he put in at least two very good crosses that were palmed out, created danger, made a shot for himself, you know, got cut into the box, had a shot. The shot was terrible, but he got into a great position. I felt like he and actually Aronson as well, to give him his due, I thought they had an impact. So that's good for Grossi as well, you know, to have players that look like they might possibly be on the edge of returning to form.
Yeah, I'm also going to go 2-1 win to Leeds. And I think it's going to be Jorginho Rutte scores his first goal for the club. And I think that regardless of whether he starts in a front two on the right-hand side of a front three, or if he comes off the bench, I just think coming off the back of Tuesday night, you know, he'll be really, really chomping at the bit to get himself on the score sheet. And without Thiago Silva in there, whoever's playing for Chelsea in that position, whether they're coming in from the cold, whether they haven't had, you know, regular minutes, I do think it's something that Leeds have to look to exploit. So I think Rutter's going to get one. I think, who gets the other one? I think it's a defender. I think Leeds get one, whether it's scrappy or it's a towering header, but I think it's from a set piece. I really want to say Robin Koch, because he's done really well against Mitrovic and against, was it Paul Onuachu for Southampton? The 6'7" guy?
The big un, yeah.
Yeah, the big un, aye. He's done really well against both of those. And I think, again, he deserves a goal. He's playing fantastically at the moment, is Robin. So, yeah, Rutter and Robin with the goals for me. So, Graham, do we have any final points of whimsy before we log off for this one? I know that you're probably dying to talk more about how much cyclists wearing AirPods at crossings in West London annoy you like you did. Because I was really interested in hearing that. just in my ear. Really, really interested.
I just can't get over it. I can't get over what I saw. Just
did you say he was cruising to be knocked over? Is that something you said?
No. I think I would put it in more reasonable, socially acceptable terms, like he is taking a real risk with his very precious life.
Yeah, and then you kind of went in on Jeremy Vine as well.
Yeah, I mean, as a cyclist, I feel like I'm qualified to say that. And it's not, I can't believe you've suckered me into this at the end of what was a fairly normal and sensible, a Javi Gracia-esque press conference. What I'd rather get into is, will we ever hear an injury update ever again? Because it feels like we won't. It feels like injury updates are a thing of the past now.
Give them up though? If it meant Leeds staying up and Javi Gracia staying, would you give up injury updates forever for that price?
Would I choose Premier League football over a return to the Championship from whence I came? That's a really difficult question, Joe. I think I'm going to go with the Premier League.
Okay, Premier League final answer. We're locking that in. Right, well, before I rope you into any more, I don't know, things that you don't want to say or things that you don't want people to know you've said, then we may as well close this one out. Thanks for tuning in to the Inside Elland Road podcast. Do check out all the post-presser stuff on the Yorkshire Evening Post website. But we'll be back next week with another episode and hopefully with 3 points in the bag from West London. Take care and bye for now. The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.